So I would say if your kids want to learn, great, whenever, any age is fine. But if they're not asking for it, that wait until they need it. And then when they need it, it'll happen for them.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name's Deborah Kerluck. I went to university and became a math teacher and taught for 5 years before I had my first child. Well, I was thinking about what unschooling math means to me, and I actually decided that I didn't want to think about it as unschooling math. For me, it's just part of life, and I don't like to think of it as a separate subject area, that it's just part of living, that the math skills that they really need, they just pick up with what we do every day. When my kids are young, I guess the things, if you wanted to decide on what math skills or what math they needed, for me it would be numeracy, logic, and reasoning. So being able to count and multiply it, just the basic skills, and reasoning would be the most important thing for me. Doing jigsaw puzzles, solving puzzles, playing games, a creative approach to solving things as opposed to algebra or something, some defined math concept. I didn't really know what unschooling was when I first made the decision about not sending Emma to kindergarten, but I would notice that all of a sudden she was counting by tens. She would just be singing a song in the back seat of the car counting by tens, and I had never sat down with her and told her, how do you count by tens? I don't know how it happened, but it happened. And those are the kind of things all the way along that I've noticed. I'm in the store buying paper plates, and they are packaged by 35s. And I bought three packages, and Emma just right away asked me why I needed 105 plates. So I know that those skills are there. We go into the dollar store, and my son knows that if he spends $2 at the dollar store, he has to have $2.30 because there's 15 cents tax on each dollar. So he's sort of learned percentages, but he doesn't know that it's a percentage. I just witness those things in my kids as they've grown. They just astound me, and then I guess I have faith that if they're learning those things like that, that they'll have the skills that they need. Perhaps because I'm a mathematician and I'm very comfortable with math, I don't make any real effort to teach math. Like, I don't even really grasp teachable moments per se, but I love puzzles and I love math, so maybe those things are just part of our life. In all our activities, I guess I see the mathematical possibilities, so I don't really try to make them teachable moments. They seem to just happen, and I think maybe other people, like a lot of people, are nervous about math when they're homeschooling. I think maybe they don't realize, like, math is in everything that they're doing. I just made a list, some of the things that over the years that we've done that I consider have fostered my kids' understanding of math: playing card games, playing solitaire. There's a solitaire where you have to add to 13 to take the cards off. Board games like Monopoly, Payday, where they collect the money and they make change. We used to just play a game with pennies and nickels and dimes where we would exchange them with each other and trade for the same amount. Stories, we've read lots of books. The doorbell rang where she's got 12 cookies and two kids show, so they get six, you know, and then the doorbell rings again. They got to split it among three people, then four people. And quilting, we did quilting with my daughter, and for quilting you have to figure out patterns and grids and stuff like that. When I'm tutoring, my kids will just come downstairs and sit at the table and play with the calculator and draw the stuff that I'm drawing. They just like to write down numbers. They're sharing candies with their friends. They've got to split them up amongst everybody. My daughter became interested in Roman numerals when we were reading some books by an author named Arthur Ransom, because at the beginning of each chapter they had them in Roman numerals. The other one, which was fun, was when we were camping, we were doing laundry and at the campground, and they had tiles all on the walls, and so we were just doing square numbers on the walls because you could just sketch out sort of a square area, and that would be 2 times 2 would be 4, and 3 times 3 would be 9. Those are just some of the things that are just everyday things that we do. What I find, and ever since my daughter was born, I've been tutoring, so I'm still involved in the traditional way of educating people in math. And what I find is, if you separate it out and make math a topic and you follow a program, a lot of the kids can follow directions and do a certain process, but they don't really understand what they're doing. They don't have a good feel for it. It's just a lot of it is memorization. And so if they want to know, how do you do this kind of problem? So then when something a little bit different comes up, they can't really solve it because they're just going on a process someone has set up for them. I just find my kids have really innate understanding of numbers at this point, and it's not memorizing. That's the big thing. Also, just because a lot of people, when they hear the word math, are afraid. Like, it's been, you know, if you separate it out, it just seems like a scary thing, and kids don't enjoy it and don't have fun with it, whereas it can be a lot of fun if you look at it that way. One of the books that sort of pushed me along this path was called The Power of Mindful Learning. And in there, they talk about how if we teach things as absolutes, so 2 plus 2 is 4, there's one answer, there's only one answer, then later on when kids are trying to solve more complicated problems where they need to use some creativity and come up with their own solutions, they're locked into a rigid way of thought. So you want to encourage different solutions to problems right from the beginning, and most programs don't do that. I know an example with my son Hayden was, he used to come to me all the time when he was a lot younger and say that 1 plus 1 equals 11, which, you know, it can. Yeah. It depends how you look at it. But if you were following a typical program, no, 1 plus 1 is 2. That's the answer. I'm hoping that kids that don't follow that kind of program are just going to have less problems in life where they have to solve problems and come up with creative solutions, that they're not locked into that there's one way to do it. There's one right answer. My kids are always saying, you know, I want to have infinity plus one, infinity plus two, right? They're trying to outdo each other. And just that whole idea, they were fascinated by the idea of infinity. Like, even the whole idea about how the discovery of zero was huge for mankind. Zero didn't always exist as a concept and things like that. And that stuff, I think, can be left out a little bit in normal programs, and that's the stuff that they really like. There's a great book called The Number Devil, and it's all about concepts like that. Infinity is one of the ones they talk about, but it's told in a story format. Every night this little boy goes to sleep, he has a dream. He meets the Number Devil, and the Number Devil takes him on a little trip, and they investigate different concepts. Types of numbers, like number groups is another one, like rational numbers, irrational numbers. But they're quite advanced concepts. But we read through that book when my daughter was probably 8, and she loved it. And she got what she could out of it, and then we'll probably read it again soon, and she'll get more out of it. But those things they love. There are lots of books out there with activities and ideas. One of the ones that I have come across that is really good, Real World Math for Hands-On Fun. So I do actually introduce activities that I think will be fun, but I don't introduce them saying we're going to do a math activity. We just, here's something fun that we can do. One of them was tessellations, where you take different shapes, like the easiest one would be a square, and you alter it in different directions, and you create an object, like say a lizard, and you can just keep inscribing these lizards all around each other, so they're all together and they're all interlocked, and the pattern just goes on forever. That's very mathematical. Another activity from that book was filling up a big jug with paint, tempera paint, and putting a squeeze bottle lid on it and hanging it from a tree and putting a piece of paper underneath it. And if you swing it around, it'll paint an ellipse on the paper, which the kids love because they're playing with paint and they're outside and they're making this huge picture, and it's sort of incidental that you get an ellipse out of it. But you can talk about it as being an ellipse and shapes. I do introduce activities. I'm always looking out for activities that I think will be fun, and we'll introduce them to some of the ideas in math. I like those things. These are coming out of books that are very user-friendly. You don't have to know anything about math to do these activities. They're accessible to anybody. But I don't do that often, though. Most of what my kids have learned, they've just learned from their day-to-day activities. A lot of what they've learned is from money, because adding with money and making change with money and going to the store with their money and saving their money, and, you know, how when it goes into an account, when it earns interest. So a lot of that stuff is very motivating for them, and I think that's how they probably learn to count. As much as you don't want to buy into the commercial society and everything, money is an issue, and handling your money and everything.
Do you think there's a right age to teach formal math?
I think that if my kids came up to me and said, I really want to learn algebra, I would teach them whenever they said that. You know, if they came up to me and they really wanted to learn something, I don't think it really matters how old they are if they wanted to learn it. Otherwise, if they don't come to me and say they want to learn about math, then I would leave it until they need it. If, for instance, carpentry, my husband does carpentry, and he uses trigonometry a lot for that. If my son decides to take up carpentry, he may need trigonometry, or he may need the Pythagorean theorem to do carpentry. Then I'll teach him when he has a need for it, and I think it'll be really easy to learn at that point. When you look at some of the textbook applications, when they're trying to teach kids a new concept and they have an application, they're usually really fabricated. They're really not sensible applications, and so they don't make sense to the kids, and the kids don't buy into them. It's really important to me that you need the math, and that when you do need it, you'll be able to learn it quickly. So I would say, if your kids want to learn, great, whenever, any age is fine. But if they're not asking for it, that wait until they need it, and then when they need it, it'll happen.
Lost my shape, trying to act casual. Can't stop, I might end up in the hospital. Changing my shape, I feel like an accident. They're back to explain their experience.
listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
My daughter did used to ask me when she was about 7 if I'd teach her calculus. Now, I couldn't really teach her calculus when she was 7 because there's just so much behind it. But, I mean, she would sit with me while I was tutoring, and she would draw parabolas when I was drawing parabolas and stuff. So she picked up some stuff. I mean, I guess there is a limit. You know what? Kids will come to the point, I think, in life where they need certain math skills, and that's when to teach them. Like, even if you don't have books lying around, math is part of life. It is a necessity. And what's not a necessity, then they don't need to learn, in my opinion. There's a lot of things that they teach that they totally forget and they never use again. I don't know that it's necessary for them to learn those things anyway. I've tutored quite a few adults who've decided to go back to college or apply to be a paramedic, things like that, and I've tutored them in math, and it's unbelievable. I mean, all the stuff that they have to study, they learned in high school and probably never looked at again in the intervening years. You know, they didn't need it, and they learn really quickly as an adult. They learn incredibly quickly when they're relearning it because they need it. They're motivated, they need it. The school system, because I'm tutoring, I can be honest with them, but they do get frustrated, and I get frustrated too. I mean, I remember doing a question with this girl. They were working on areas of circles, and they were calculating what would be the area of a one slice in a 12-slice pizza that had a diameter of 10 inches or something. And really, nobody in their right mind would ever calculate that. Right? And she just couldn't understand why. And I couldn't explain to her why you would want to do that. There was just really no use. And so they do get frustrated, but a lot of them just don't ask questions anymore. I have an hour to tutor them, and they usually come in, they just want to know, what do I have to do for this unit? And that's what I teach them. I just show them how to do what they have to do for that unit and just get them through that. They don't have a lot of curiosity, and they don't have a really sound understanding of what they're doing. Not all of them. I mean, there are some outstanding kids out there that do, but a lot of them don't have a really good grasp of what they're trying to do. And so if they come up with an answer that's ridiculous, they don't really know that it's ridiculous because they don't really have a firm grasp of what they're doing. I think kids that spend more time just learning and just by themselves and figuring these things out by themselves will probably have a better grasp. If my kids decide to go to high school in grade 9 and then they're in a formal math program, I think they'll have a good grounding in numbers, and that'll still benefit them. There was a lot of books I read to the kids when they were really young. One was called The Greedy Triangle, which was a fun story about triangle has 3 sides, and then he's greedy, he wants more sides. So he works through the different shapes until he's a circle. And then he realizes he wants to be a triangle again. Then there's some activity books. There's a set of books, one's called Circles, one's called Squares, and one's called Triangles. And they all have fun activities based around the different shapes. There's another set of books. Now, these are actually workbooks, but I really like them. They're called Mind Benders. And they're the kind of puzzles where you have 3 people, 3 names, and 3 costumes, and they give you clues, and you have to figure out which person is in which costume, and you do a chart, and you try to eliminate possibilities, and that's how you kind of figure it out who is which. So that you can get those from teacher resource stores, but they're called Mind Benders. That's the kind of thing I really like. I think is really good for kids, is doing puzzles like that. Games, just a list of games. Cribbage is awesome. You count by 5s in cribbage. A lot of strategy. Battleship, if you're exploring like how a grid works, it's just like graphing in a coordinate system. Canasta is a really good card game. They sell a special Canasta deck, which has the point values on the cards. And what I realized, because I have a lot of students who can't do their integers, can't subtract from a negative and things, with scores, you can go into the negative with Canasta. So you might have negative 100, and then you might go down another 300, so you'd be at negative 400. So Canasta can work on your plus and minuses, your integer values. Mm-hmm. Monopoly, any of those, Payday, any of those where you're making money. All those games, like the one we have is Rush Hour, but there's all sorts like gophers that you have to move around or different trains that you have to move around. Rubik's Cube, those kind of games are really good. Yahtzee is really good. There's other one, Tangrams. You can buy Tangram games where you have the shapes that make a square, and like they're triangle pieces, square pieces, and you can try to make shapes out of them. You can make them yourself. Mm-hmm. Yep. Set is a really good card game. It's just called Set, and you lay down cards, and you're making sets of 3, and you have 3 elements. You have color, shape, and shading, and you have to make a set where either all 3 are the same or all 3 are different. So you could have the 3 different shapes, you could have all of them red, and you could have the 3 different shadings or whatever. So it's totally a pattern-making game. But Set is a really awesome game. Mm. You had mentioned origami. Origami is really good. I'm not very good at origami. So we tend to get stuck. We get so far, and then we get stuck. So I haven't really pursued origami very far. But I do think it's great for math. Any game that has some strategy involved. I mean, even card games that are just plain fun but have strategy, Hearts and Oh Hell and different games like that, it develops your mind. It develops your thinking skill. Chess would be awesome. Even something as simple as those Kinder Eggs that have the little toys in them. My daughter is the best assembler of Kinder Egg toys in the world. Also, like, that has transferred. This summer we were at a friend's cottage and they bought bunk beds. And she spent the entire day helping my friend assemble these bunk beds from the directions. And she's not a very good reader. She can read directions by looking at the pictures. And she was actually, like, a huge help to my friend in assembling this bunk bed thing. Whereas myself, I have a hard time putting together IKEA furniture, even with me reading the instructions. But she has developed, she is very competent at assembling things. I would attribute that as a math skill, too, like a logical set of steps that she can follow. So I was talking to a friend recently who is very worried about the whole math area, and her child has sort of developed a bit of a fear of it. So I said, just play the game with him, and then afterwards you tell him, wow, that was math, you know, that was math, and that was great, you did it. Because it does become a fear issue, the introduction of symbols in math, like times and divide and add and subtract. I haven't really introduced those symbols. So my dad will, because he's not totally in favor of the whole unschooling path, he will quiz them and he will say, what's 3 times 7? They won't necessarily know what he's talking about. But then I'll say to them, well, if you had 3 packages of 7 donuts, how many donuts would you have? Most kids can figure that out. It's important, too, to know that just because they don't know the lingo, they may still know how to do those processes. I haven't even, I mean, my kids are 11 and 9, and we haven't sat down and introduced the symbols. We've talked about it on and off a little bit, but they know how to do 3 times 7, but not necessarily because they don't know their times tables. We haven't memorized times tables. And I don't think that's a bad thing. If you can sit down and memorize the times tables, that's great. That's a useful skill to have. But because I've been unschooling all the way along, my kids aren't very receptive to me sitting them down and having them do something formal like that. But when I can go to the store and my daughter can tell me what 335s are faster than I can get those paper plates off the shelf, I figure whatever she's doing is working, and I don't have to have her memorize them, right? And I honestly have students in grade 10 and 11 who can't do that. So whatever she's doing, she's working it out her own way. She doesn't see herself as being great at math, you know, like, because when she talks to her friends in school, they talk about what they're doing, and she probably thinks she's not great at math. We don't do math. I don't worry about it. You can do numbers. At this point, that's what matters. You know, when you're 18 and you decide you want to go and study chemistry or something, then we'll worry about the math, and you'll learn it so fast then, it'll be amazing, rather than drilling it over all the years. Honestly, my kids probably wouldn't say that they're good at math. I think they're awesome at math because they've developed their own little ways of multiplying and adding and subtracting. And like, even with my son who's 9, knowing the taxes when we go to the dollar store, to me, really, you know, he just doesn't know it's math because we just don't talk about it as, you know, we're going to do math or whatever. The thing is, like, they think there's some other thing out there called math they're not good at, when that's what they're doing all the time. They're always doing it. For me, it's been a natural progression. They keep showing me in little ways that they know things, and I'm happy with the level they're at. I myself, you know, having been to school for math, I'm learning a lot from my kids. I tend to do it the way I've been taught to do it. Here's the solution. I don't tend to have a lot of creativity in my solutions, and I'm thinking with my kids that they have more of that. And it's very different for me, like having been to school and being through everything. I think we have very different experiences and approaches. I feel a little limited myself. The one book that I read that I really liked was that, The Power of Mindful Learning. And because having taught, I noticed that girls tend to do really well in math in elementary years, where there's a lot of rote memorization. And then when they hit high school, a lot of them tend to encounter problems. And that's when they start asking kids to synthesize and come up with their own solutions to problems. And that's exactly what they were saying in this book, was that, you know, if you teach them that there's one way to do it, right and wrong, right from the beginning, then you can't all of a sudden expect them to try to take different pathways later on. I know that math is, for a lot of parents that are homeschooling, that's the area that worries them. And for me, it's other areas because I feel really strong in the math. I guess for me, it's more the literature and reading, and my kids have been a little slower in that area. So I think that if people just reflect upon, because it's their, if it's their own weakness, doesn't mean that their kids are going to suffer from that. You know, anyone who's weak in math has probably been through the system. I think we can just trust our kids to learn the numeracy skills they need just through life, that that'll do them really well.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Hello, my name is Madeline Kay, and I just turned 7 yesterday. I'm going to read Days with Frog and Toad by Arnold LaBelle. And the chapter is called Tomorrow. Tomorrow. Toad woke up. "Drat," he said. "This house is a mess. I have so much work to do." Frog looked through the window. "Toad, you are right," said Frog. "It is a mess." Toad put the covers over his head. "I will do it tomorrow," said Toad. "Today I will take life easy." Frog came into the house. "Toad," said Frog, "your pants and jacket are lying on the floor." "Tomorrow," said Toad, from under the covers. "Your kitchen sink is filled with dirty dishes," said Frog. "Tomorrow," said Toad. "There is dust on your chairs." "Tomorrow," said Toad. "Your windows need scrubbing," said Frog. "Your plants need watering." "Tomorrow," cried Toad. "I will do it all tomorrow." Toad sat on the edge of his bed. "But blah," said Toad. "I feel down in the dumps." "Why?" asked Frog. "I'm thinking about tomorrow," said Toad. "I'm thinking about all the many things that I will have to do." "Yes," said Frog. "Tomorrow will be a very hard day for you." "But Frog," said Toad, "if I pick up my pants and jacket right now, then I will not have to pick them up tomorrow, will I?" "No," said Frog, "you will not have to." Toad picked up his clothes. He put them in the closet. "Frog," said Toad, "if I wash my dishes right now, then I will not have to wash them tomorrow, will I?" "No," said Frog, "you will not have to." Toad washed and dried his dishes. He put them in the cupboard. "Frog," said Toad, "if I dust my chairs and scrub my windows and water my plants right now, then I will not have to do it tomorrow, will I?" "No," said Frog, "you will not have to do any of it." Toad dusted his chairs, he scrubbed his windows, he watered his plants. "There," said Toad, "now I feel better. I am not in the dumps anymore." "Why?" asked Frog. "Because I have done all that work," said Toad. "Now I can save tomorrow for something that I really want to do." "What is that?" asked Frog. "Tomorrow," said Toad, "I can just take life easy." Toad went back to bed. He pulled the covers over his head and fell asleep. The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.